The following is a production of BYU Broadcasting in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.
What images come to mind when I mention Holland? Tulips? Windmills? Maybe wooden shoes? How about Germany? Perhaps you think of Lederhosen, Oktoberfest, and sausages. In my own home, whenever I say Japan, my little girls immediately think of chopsticks, or ohashi, as they call them. Regions, countries, and ethnic groups generally come with distinct cultural markers, emblems, artifacts, stereotypes, and ways of being. What about the Basques? If you haven't got a way to peg them, if you've drawn a blank, if absolutely nothing comes to mind, you're not alone. The Basque country lies in the region of the Pyrenees Mountains that separate France from the Iberian Peninsula. There is a Basque language, a Basque culture, once independent of Spain's cultural and political reach. I'm Marcus Smith, thinking aloud today with a couple of gentlemen who are likely to be far more conversant with the Basque people than either you or I. We'll get to know the Basques better on today's program. Thanks for joining us. Michael Morris is a visiting Basque language professor for the BYU summer term. He graduated from BYU with a degree in international relations in 1978, received a Master of Arts in Hispanic Linguistics and General Linguistics from the University of Colorado in 1984. He has received a degree in English Philology from the University of the Basque Country in 2001. Since 1979, he has lived in the Basque country of northern Spain. He's the founder and owner of the Morris Academy of English Language in Zarautz, Spain, in the heart of the Basque country. He's fluent in the Basque language, as you might have guessed by now. He's the author of what is probably today's foremost Basque English dictionary and other lexicographical aids. And he serves as the international press affairs spokesman for the Basque National Party, the ruling party in the Basque Autonomous Community of Northern Spain. And as we were just visiting here in the studio before joining you, I asked him if it was a faux pas to even talk about the region being part of Northern Spain. We might get to that in today's conversation. Right now, I'd just like to welcome Michael Morris to Thinking Aloud. Thanks for joining with us.
Thank you.
Also with us is Jared Larson, a BYU junior with Basque ancestry, studying Spanish and political science. He's from Burley, Idaho, and has worked as a missionary for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in the northern regions of Spain. He spent most of his time there in the Basque country. Jared Larson, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
You know, Basque as a language is not part of the standard curriculum at BYU. This is a very rare opportunity. And I'd like to ask Jared, why did you jump on the moment and take a language in Basque other than your mission involvement?
Well, as you mentioned, my great-grandmother is the child of Basque immigrants, immigrated to Idaho to be part of the shepherd community that took care of the sheep in Idaho, and I wanted to get a better understanding for what their life was and how they lived it in the old country, just as much as how they lived it here and how they preserved the language in their community when they came over here.
Now, you know, a great-grandmother is a few generations back, and oftentimes four generations is enough time to lose sort of the continuity with the culture. Did you have anything in your family life growing up that was marked with a stamp of Basque culture?
Yes and no. Given the nature of my family, I did know my great grandmother, and she just recently passed away last November, actually. And so I did know her, and I did know a lot about it. My mother lived with her grandmother in her formative years, and she grew up around my grandmother feeding all the Basque community in her home for lunchtime because they took care of my grandparents' sheep. And so she grew up with the Basque cuisine and the Basque language around her, even though she didn't really pick it up a little bit. But she did grow up around that, and that was always part of our life. And we have participated in Basque festivals that take place in the section of Idaho where I live.
It's no secret that Idaho is thought of as being the state with a heavy contingent of Basque immigrants. At the same time, California, in sheer numbers, has more. But we think of Idaho. We think of sheep herders. Why the connection with sheep? Does anybody really know? Michael Morris, maybe. Do we know?
Because... One section of the Basque country has always been, let's say, adept at sheep herding. But Basques have always been adept at other things. Basques invented the concept of whaling as we know it. Maybe that's not politically correct to say that, but that's how it is. And they were whaling off the coast of Nova Scotia even back in the 12th century. The thing is, they didn't care about conquering anything. They just were in there for the for the whaling and their fishing.
Well, presumably Jared's ancestors.
Okay, I guess I'm digressing. But also the.
I was just going to mention the lack of whales in Idaho was a problem for them, so they defaulted to sheep, right?
His ancestors are from Marquina, and they're, I guess, very famous for being good Basque sheep herders. And Basque sheep herders were considered to be just about the best because they were very austere and they were very responsible and they were able to adapt themselves to the new conditions in the new world better than, let's say, other shepherds across Europe. And so that's why they were highly prized.
In the 1920s, when my family came to America, we must realize that in that region of Spain, things were, there was a lot of political problems as well as economic problems as well, and so they were very fairly destitute. And my great-great-grandfather, who immigrated over and married his wife in Idaho, and met his wife, who was also from northern Spain, the Basque Country, northern Spain, was the second child in the family and therefore received nothing in inheritance. And he had to find some means of supporting himself and, you know, continuing on and having a family. And at the time, there were many people heading to Idaho. And I just assume that that's probably, I think, we know that he originally went to Jordan Valley, Oregon. And I know throughout all of the Intermountain West, you can feel the Basque influence that has, you know, touched the sheep community, the shepherd community throughout the Intermountain West.
Is there a nomadic aspect to this? Once they come to the United States, they're moving from Oregon to
Idaho? No, the Basque are, you can divide them more or less according to the provinces. In Idaho, they're mostly from Biscay or Biscaya. Mm-hmm. The ones in Nevada are mostly Upper Navarre, or a few from Iparralde, the French Basque Country. In France, California, most seem to be from, or at least originally were from the French Basque Country, Iparralde.
And you mentioned Basque festivals. Even today in Idaho, there are such things as Basque festivals?
Yes, every 5 years in Boise, they have Chayaldi, which is the big Basque festival. And I haven't gone to it since 1990 when I was a little kid. I was on my mission during 2005 when they had the most recent one, so I haven't gone to it for a long time. But it's world-renowned. People, I don't remember how many plane loads I read in the newspaper of Basque people came over to this Boise festival. But even in Gooding, Idaho, where it's a small town of about, you know, 2,000-4,000 people in south central Idaho, where my grandmother lived, they have a Basque community center. They have a Basque supper once a month. And I go with my grandparents as occasion permits.
Did you hear the Basque language spoken in your home or at these events?
At the events, yes. Not in my home ever. I did hear my grandma speak it very rarely. There were just not as many speakers around as when my mother was a child. But at the Basque supper I went to last January when I was home for Christmas, there were many Basque speakers there and many conversing in Basque there.
It also should be pointed out that there's other Basque festivals across the United States, or at least Western United States. For example, Elko, Nevada is very famous for its 4th of July Basque Bash, you know, and a lot of people get together and they have what they call Escolaritza, it's wood chopping and tug of war, Socatira, and things like that. And I know there's other festivals in California too, so it's kind of a part of the Intermountain West way of life.
Let's talk about perhaps there is something intrinsic that is unique, that distinctly marks this group as an ethnic community that seems to hold together even in the diaspora across the globe. They still have these festivals and communities. What does it mean to be Basque? Michael Morris.
Oh, that's a loaded question. Arguably, for example, the Basque language has been better preserved in the United States than, for example, Basque communities in Argentina and Uruguay. But I guess it's the idea of a lot of the people had to abandon their country against their will, but economic forces pushed them across the Atlantic. And so, in a way, they felt bereft of their homeland. And so when they got to see their other paisanos and their fellow countrymen, then they naturally congregated. And also there's, I guess, of course, the language brought them together as well. And just the idea of the Basque way of having fun, the Basque way of eating, it's very, very a strong way. The Basque way of eating, it's hard to explain, but essentially it's a long process. It's not like here in the States, many Americans just sit down and we eat in about an hour. So, oh, that's good enough, I'm full, bye. No, Basque, you have several courses. In the meantime, when dinner progresses, and then of course, in their case, they whip out wine, and when the wine starts to flow, then music starts to flow, and then they start singing, and it's a big long cultural thing, and these and other things keep the community very, very close-knit.
Jared, when you first arrived in the Basque country as a missionary, what sorts of things stood out to you that were emblems of Basqueness?
Well, I think the topography of the country is really reflective of the people as well. I mean, the Basque country is really a gem, and it's really one of the most beautiful sections of earth that I've ever seen in my life, and I've had the privilege to be in. But I think the rugged atmosphere, the mountainous topography, the raging tides, all those sort of things that the Basque people grew up around, and I think it's reflective in their character in that sense. I don't know if I'm being waxing philosophical here, but I think it's very reflective on how they approach life, as much as their language reflects that as well. But that was probably the thing that most stood out to me, their hospitality, especially once they knew that I had some connection to the Basque community.
Well, that made a difference, did it?
It did. I will say that I had a lot more conversations in the street as a missionary with people about the gospel, about the church, than I ever would have had I not been able to express to them some way of connecting to their community. That's
now,
certainly true.
The language, Michael Morris was brought to BYU as a visiting professor for summer term to teach. It's such an odd thing here to have university course in a language. Does that happen elsewhere in the country?
Actually, yes. The University of Nevada at Reno, I think, has some courses in it. And perhaps the Boise State University as well. There may be a few other select places as
University of Iowa has had some courses, too.
Now, I've caught wind of a notion, and you can tell me if this notion is correct or not, but that in part some of the BYU professors have been involved in the course you're teaching, Michael Morris, to observe or maybe to study as linguists.
Absolutely. For example, David Laraway is, of course, the hero for me. He's the one that – he's also of Basque ancestry, and he's pushed very hard to have this be able to bring me here and for this to happen. So
we had hoped to have David Laraway with us. I understand he's out of the country at the moment.
Actually, in the Basque country, I think.
So now, there's something very unique about the family of languages from which this stems, the origins of the language. We don't even know necessarily where this language comes from, do we?
Yeah, some of the stupidest things ever written about languages anywhere has been written about the origin of the Basque language. And when I say stupid, I'm talking about, too, as some people say, the original Adamic language. Some people said it's the language of the Atlanteans when they escaped. They just swam over
back
to
out
the Basque.
The ocean.
You know, some people have tried to relate it to the Sioux language. That was particularly stupid. And then more plausible has been tried to make it be related to Berber language, which is spoken in North Africa, the Guanche language, which is an extinct language that used to be spoken in the Canary Islands, and more interesting is the attempt to make Basque, or to find a relationship between Basque and some of the Caucasian languages in the Caucasian region, for example, Georgian and Ahvaz and other languages probably nobody has ever heard of, even Chechen. But the thing of the fact of the matter is we don't know where it came from. But what's most likely what happened is that in Europe, in the misty haze of prehistory, Basque-like languages were spoken across Europe, and then Indo-European invaders, i.e., the Celts, Germanic tribes, and then, of course, the Romans came and essentially swamped and I won't say exterminate, but essentially the languages became extinct, all except for Basque. There's only one language that's been proven to be related to Basque, and that's the language of Aquitania, which was spoken 2,000 years ago, and that's just based on certain inscriptions they found on rings. So
now, is there some evidence that this language has not morphed as other languages are wont to do? If I were to go back to Elizabethan England, I probably wouldn't be understood or understand others.
Well, bear in mind that English is a kind of a strange language. Linguistically speaking, English is essentially kind of Dutch that was influenced by, that combined with Danish, and then it was invaded by French, and then in the 16th century, then it became flooded with words from classical Latin and classical Greek, and then you stir them up, then you add new coinages, and then words from the New World, and this is more or less where you get English. Basque, on the other hand, and some languages are inherently very conservative, and that's probably because Basque is so different structurally that it's hard to change because it's so different from its neighboring languages, whereas English was more or less similar to its surrounding languages. That's why it was able to, let's say, blend better. So that's probably explains why Basque has been so conservative. There's a few conservative languages like that in Europe. For example, Lithuanian. It's an Indo-European language, but it's extremely conservative. And there's been inscriptions they've discovered recently about 3rd century A.D., 300 A.D., and essentially any modern Basque could understand it. There are even early Christian inscriptions which still has everybody amazed. No, so they're still not sure these are true because it's so amazingly close to modern Basque that it's just incredible. Whereas if you compare English with, let's say, Anglo-Saxon chronicles, only probably a German speaker could perhaps begin to understand these, but no modern speaker of English with any training could understand them.
Well, what accounts for this? I mean, you could talk the term, the purity of the language, perhaps that's a loaded value statement there, but at least the conservatism of the language. What accounts for the fact that it's
Before, because it's so different from other languages that there's a built-in resistance from there. And so, and also, they did have contact because the Basque Country is not, you know, just an isolated area, because they had thousands and thousands of pilgrims went to the Way of St. James, which is the Santiago de Compostela, where they said that St. James is buried. And so, pilgrims passed through there. So the Basque Country hasn't been isolated, but for some reason, the people, I guess their psyche, maybe it's the mountain idea, they live in the mountains, and I guess they're just the psychology as a people, I can't explain that, but they're extremely conservative and they hold on and they're persistent in being what they are, and they don't want to assimilate so easily without losing their identity.
So would you say that the Basques today even sort of look to the mountains in, maybe I'm going to wax a little literary here, but as towers of refuge? Do they, I know when the Latter-day Saints came out to the West, they saw the mountains as a bastion to be.
Okay, but you're looking at the Basque kind of romantic idea. Please bear in mind that about 80% of Basques live in cities. And so and the Basque Country is the most heavily industrialized area of Spain. And so some people might think Basque are a bunch of sheep herders or even whalers, but actually it's the most developed part of Spain. This probably explains some of the political problems because it's very wealthy. It's definitely, if it were an independent country, it'd be among the top European countries as far as per capita income is concerned. So.
But we've jumped from psychology to economics here, and so I'm wondering still isn't something.
Well,
I think the
psychology is they're afraid of losing their identity, and the other people, the French and the Spanish, for example, their policies up to now have been, you know, you stupid peasants, you know, why don't you just want to be like normal cosmopolitans like us, you know? And they haven't really bought that argument, at least most parts of the Basque Country. And so with this constant bombardment of, why don't you just, you know, forget about it and just assimilate and just be normal Spaniards or normal French, and that probably explains why their vehemence to hold on to their identity.
This is very interesting because urban centers tend to be the place where cultural identity breaks down. Jared, when you were in the region, you were in cities?
Mainly, yes.
And did you observe that people were wont to speak in Basque more frequently than in Spanish? What sort of a mix did you see?
Well, I served in Bilbao and in San Sebastian, which are prominent Basque cities. And without a doubt, the most common language spoken was Spanish within the city. However, once I was able to venture out into the outer-lying communities, you do hear Basque a lot more. And that's not to say that you never hear Basque in Bilbao, or especially not in San Sebastian. You do hear it a lot in the streets, but it is for sure that Basque is, or Spanish is much more spoken within the city and within the outer-lying communities. But it may be perhaps because of the psychology of the language. Sometimes they use it for different people. I mean, or me, they might understand that I obviously. Maybe perhaps at the time wasn't a Basque speaker. Maybe Michael can.
If you're talking about technology, you're going to use.
It's kind of complicated. Okay, please bear in mind today, throughout the Basque Autonomous Community, anyway, most of the children now are learning not just Basque; they're learning in Basque. That means mathematics, physics, history. It's being taught through Basque, and so that includes most of the people in Bilbao today. Believe it or not. And so, and of course, in the province where I live, Gipuzkoa, it's, I think two people asked their children to be educated through Spanish. You know, two people, that's it. And so essentially, Basque is the language of the educational system today, at least by a great majority. And he's right, in the larger cities, it's the presence is much reduced. But if you compare to what it was, let's say 30 years ago when I came on the scene there, I would say that it's improved dramatically.
So is there a concerted social agenda to reinstitute the old ways, and foremost among them perhaps the language?
Okay, I wouldn't call it old ways. I would say like status quo ante.
Okay.
I like that, sounds better. The old ways sounds like let's go back to, you know.
Sure. But there was the Franco period when there was this purge or an attempted purge of the culture.
Right. Well, I wouldn't say it's Franco. It's been throughout history. The Franco is just particularly nasty about it. But, I mean, even in the 17th century, for example, the Juntechiak, or the, I guess, I forget how you say it in Spanish, but the Parliament of Bilbao, they prohibited the use of Basque being spoken. That was a way to more or less grab hold of power and exclude the majority of the province. And also, Basque in the education was always frowned upon. It was never used in government. And so there have been prohibitions, you know, throughout the history. But Franco, of course, was most vociferous about that. Because after they won the Civil War, they even chipped Basque names off tombstones. They prohibited Basque names. So if you were Gorka, you had to go back to, you had to change your name to Jorge. If you were like Alastna, you had to become Gloria, or not Alastna, Angeles, I think, yeah.
Did there turn out to be a cultural underground for the Basques?
Well, it was, yeah, definitely pushed underground, and then there's just extreme resentments below, but it wasn't able to be expressed because during Franco's time, all such expressions were brutally suppressed, especially, I guess, the first 20 years after the Civil War. And, of course, Basque publication was prohibited except for a few things. Basque on the radio was not permitted, and, of course, television, when it finally came, was absolutely not permitted.
Well, if I go to the region today, can I listen to the Basque language in all the media, in television, radio?
Oh, yeah, and others. Euskal Telebista, which is that has a Basque channel, and there's some local stations. It depends on how Basque-speaking the town is, but now it's quite vibrant, and you see it's, on the street signs. I mean, you might, in Sadaus, for example, the street signs are definitely not in Spanish. You see Calle Nagusia, you don't say Calle Mayor. You see Cinco Negi Calia, and you wouldn't say Calle Cinco Negi. You know, it's all in Basque. And so it's, and also, I've seen this happen because I've seen all the transitions that, before the children would speak only in Spanish, but since then, most of them speak in Basque, for example, at least in Sadaus, where I live. And so, this has happened in such a way that a lot of the Spanish speakers who only speak Spanish are complaining about being discriminated because I guess there's a kind of affirmative action going on to let's say get back to where it was before.
We've got just a couple minutes left. I'm interested in your personal story because to listen to you, one would surmise that you're a native of the region, but you are not. And you're not of Basque parentage.
No, I'm not.
So how did this happen? This is so interesting that somebody would latch on so easily, readily perhaps, to this foreign culture.
Well, essentially I graduated from BYU 1 year early. I graduated in 3 years and got my BA instead of four. So I thought, well, this extra year I'm going to do something crazy like learn Basque because I had been there in Franco's last year, which is 1975, and that things were really boiling. I mean, I saw pamphlets everywhere, half of them with a hammer and sickle. I thought, oh my gosh, what's going on here? There was Spanish fascist police. When I say fascist, I don't say like, you know, conservative. I'm talking about people with a stiff arm problem. I mean, that kind of fascist. You know, Mussolini maybe wasn't such a bad guy type fascist. And then I discovered the Basque language, and they were so happy that I say, you know, I sang songs, and they just, wow, there's. And so I decided, well, I'm going to go back. And so I did. And then while I was there, things were just boiling. I mean, the Basque were reaffirming their identity, while at the same time, and I must say this, I mean, people were being shot by ETA, the terrorist group. Mostly civil guards, but even girlfriends of civil guards, so it was pretty nasty.
So you came back to the country then, and we just have a few seconds, but you came back to the country right during this surge of renewed Basque interests and national identity.
Yeah.
And then you stayed.
Yeah, I stayed. That's because I started doing my Basque English dictionary, and I just had to stay for that, and I thought it'd take me about 2 or 3 years, but it took me 19.
And so you were stuck for the duration there.
Absolutely.
But it's the water you swim in now.
You got it, yeah.
Well, Michael Morris, thank you so much for joining with us on Thinking Aloud today to inform us a little bit about Basque culture and language.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And thanks also to Jared Larson for joining us, a BYU student. Our guests today have been Jared Larson. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And Michael Morris. Michael Morris is the one responsible for the foremost Basque English and Basque Language Dictionary, and is the International Press Affairs Spokesman for the Basque National Party. He's been teaching this summer at BYU. More information about today's show can be found at our website. You can hear it again at classical89.org/thinkingaloud. Also go there for podcasts and any of our past interviews. We welcome your comments at our email address, thinkingaloud@byu.edu. Our production team consists of Wes Sims and Koyo Iamba and BYU students Rob Sanders, Carlos Sweatin, and Robin Miners. Listen for us every weekday at 11 a.m. Mountain Time, and remember that on Tuesdays, we bring you a BYU devotional or forum broadcast. I'm Marcus Smith, and this has been Thinking Aloud.
Thinking Aloud is a production of BYU Broadcasting, made possible in cooperation with the Brigham Young University Division of Continuing Education.